Welcome to Betting 360, your number one source for horse racing and sports betting insights. Coming around the bend is your host, David Duffield, with another expert interview to give you the winning edge.
Hi, this is David Duffield and welcome to another episode of the Betting 360 podcast. This week I've got Matty Cosgrove back on the line. He was the senior racing and sports trader at Betfair, but finished there fairly recently. Been in the industry for almost 20 years now, so got a fair bit of experience and a fair bit of insight. I'm going to talk to him about the role of a modern day trader, bookmaking, both on course and off course, and also just sports betting and the threat it poses to the horse racing industry, and the demographic trend that's certainly not in favour of horse racing. So let's talk to Matt. Welcome back to the show, Matt. How are you doing?
Good, mate. Good. Very good.
That's good. Last time we spoke, you were the senior racing and sports trader at Betfair, but they've made a few changes recently when the BetEasy deal went through. So just talk about what happened at Betfair as far as the BetEasy acquisition, you might say, and also what role you were doing there.
Well, Betfair, the Australian franchise, was bought out by Crown in 2014, and with the sportsbook office, we're actually coming along quite well, and the actual directive from Crown was to enter into a JV with BetEasy, and BetEasy went and controlled virtually the business from there. A few of the traders went across on BetEasy selection, and the redundancy packages were handed out to the remainder of the office, which the guys accepted, and everyone's moved on from that point.
And so when you were there as a racing and sports trader, what did that involve, and what kind of skills did that require?
It's pretty much Sean Byrne headed up the office, and we were actually conducting bookmaking side of the business, the fixed odds racing and the risk management of all the racing that was going on that covered all three codes, fixed odds for the thoroughbred racing. And we went going along really well. The numbers were very well above forecast prior to the JV of BetEasy going ahead. But as a bookmaker, it was usually pretty much what we were doing in the old been doing for a long time, nearly 18 years, but at the end of the day too, we also had stringent rules that we had to run to by management as to who we bet and how much we were betting. So it was very much a good structured business, and now BetEasy currently have that.
And so you mentioned the stringent rules. What flexibility do you have, or do some of the other traders have at corporate bookmakers, in that you've got to toe the company line, but also we're dealing with risk every day. So what leeway do you have there?
The leeway that you did have, I mean, with our office, we were still in the process of growing the business. So we took on a lot of business that others may not have taken on. You probably don't take it on to the capacity that you probably would have liked to, only because, there were different ways of handling the business. But we were pretty much very aggressive, in a lot of areas. And especially in the metros, we bet up quite well. So at the end of the day, it was, it was a good, solid business. And, you think you got to be able to think on your feet pretty quickly. The game's not so much a trade-out business as it used to be, especially working on the race course. That's how it used to be. But it's very much I suppose now it's more of a closed-in business in the industry, that is. So that's a lot of the differences that you've seen, probably only in that time. I was at Betfair only for several years.
So if you're having to play heads at times in that you're dealing with some pretty smart guys, if some really smart money comes through, are you looking to, bet that back straight away? Are you adjusting your prices, doing both? How do you approach?
Oh, you definitely got to respect the money. For sure. You do try. I mean, it's a game of hot potato, but I think the best thing too is when you do take on smarter money being a trader, I think some of the times you get directions from people who probably haven't been on a trading floor before, and that kind of probably don't understand that if you can actually take on professional money, people actually do win. It can actually help you in the process as long as your trade is efficient. And I think that that's the reason why I think the markets are what they are today, because people don't really want to bother with that, put the risk that maybe the trader may get it wrong and I think that they see positive figures, so that's the way they run with it. But personally, me, I prefer to take on the smarter money. That happens still on the race course today, and those guys still keep turning up. So it's if you're good enough at doing the trade, I think it's very much in your interest to at least take on for an amount. You've still got to get the indication of where the market's going to head, because at the end of the day, for me, it's all about getting to where the market's going to be, because the efficiency of the SP over time sells itself. But it's the movement in the markets that the trader's probably got to be more aware of. It's not so much when you're assessing probabilities of runners, you've got to be really a lot more precise these days because you don't have much more margin to work with. But I think it's still best if someone rings up and says you want a couple of thousand, you know the head early on in the betting. Provided you've got trading outlets, of course. Most of the people do use the exchange, and you can always use an on-course bookmaker by the phone, and then the on-course bookmaker can disperse through the ring. So I always still see how that trade option is still available, and I'd encourage actual businesses to take it on.
So if it is all about getting to where the market is going to be, and you mentioned the efficiency of SP, how can some of the other corporates do it when they just refuse to take not just smart money, but even reasonably well-informed money?
Well, you can't tell them how to run their business. They've all got their set structures and obviously what works for them. But I can tell you now, if you take, say you put up 2-1 a guy and he wants 4-2, a horse, in the end up saying, I'll bet you 2-1, and then obviously, that 2-1 will not live. I can give you that. But if you can ring up and say, look, I'll bet you 1,000, it gives that guy a chance to, and if the trader's probably only, got a bit announced about him, he would have had to back himself across the market, and that would have happened within the space of a minute. And you're sitting well, and then you've got the ability to go lay the other horse, be on the exchange or on the, within your business, depending on how mature the business is. But you've got a great leeway where they're going to go, because if a professional is going to back a second favourite or a favourite, they're not going to back the other one. They're not going to take them both. So you've definitely got a lead on where the market's at. And if you're good enough to trade out, get some more on, where you're in a good enough position to really make a strong strong outcome on your book, should the professional money be right.
So you've got experience, punting and bookmaking on course and online. Do you think the New South Wales minimum bet rules that have been very well received by punters, do you think it's feasible for them to be Australia-wide? Or, would the bookmakers, I suppose, hold up okay under those circumstances, and do you think it would benefit the industry overall?
Yeah, I definitely do. I think, well, if you go on the racetrack now, I mean, I've been going the last few weeks since I've left Betfair, but, you can get on to win up to 5,000 and the boys will let you on. I haven't seen a bet get knocked back on course yet. So to say you can't get on Victoria to win 2,000, or where I'm from anyway, that is not right. You can easily get on the course, that is. With the corporate sector, I'm not too sure how everyone's accounts are looking. But, the fact is, I think if they do encourage to bet to win 2,000, I actually can't see it being a negative for the business, because I think the traders, if they're good enough, would actually be able to use that very well to their advantage. And you only have to bet to win one person. It's not like you're betting 10 people at once. So if, 10 people come at the price, you're only going to bet one to win 2,000 anyway, and then turn it off. There's a strong push, then you can really go back, reassess your market. If you can't trade out, well, then you're only standing 1-2,000 going into a Saturday, and most of these joints are going to hold how much. So for me, I don't see it that big a deal.
And do you think there are other ways that the market might be able to open up and then, like I said, overall boost the industry?
Look, I think the market, it all depends on how wide you want to bet, I suppose. But to me, I think there's a lot of overreaction to it with a lot of the accounts that get closed. I've seen some blokes get closed and I'm thinking, oh, gee, I wouldn't take that. But you just got to remember too, the people do have their winning days. There are meetings where favourites do, win a lot of bulk of the meeting. It's, you just got to be able to assess the punter in itself. And to me, it's more the pattern they bet, not the results that they get, that really just tells them how they're going to turn out. I mean, I've seen winning clients who've been going on and they've won 6 weeks in a row only to lose it all in 1 week, because that's how the losing punter really works. It's not so much how they win, it's when they actually end up losing it, and they lose it pretty quick. So the smarter punters will always be structured. They don't panic, they don't chase, they're very good and well-mannered. And to me, that's the more of the pattern that I'd look for. It's not so much the results they get, but also to the price variance that they do get. Of course, that's important. They're going to take eight things going off fives. Okay, you've got an issue. But they take it off once and the next one goes five there to eights and they're on at the fives, well, to me, that's not a problem. Because you've got to remember, too, at the end of the day, it's the bookmaker's got all the power in his hands percentage-wise. It's the punters that have to keep finding the winner. So I wouldn't really, I wouldn't worry too much about some of the guys that have been cut off. But then again, too, if someone's got you after a month, after 2 months, after 3 months, after 6 months, yeah, okay, he's pretty good. But at the end of the day, too, his business, it can actually benefit the bookmaker as well by saying, okay, we've got a good one, but we'll keep him in our pocket and we'll get the lead off where the market's at. Because at the end of the day, I know, here's a case study for you. There's a bookmaker that took a bet on Saturday, first call, and he took 5,000 to 800 a horse, and he was able to bet it back to have 10 to 16. He's on to win 5,000. The smart money's on. The horse got heavily tried in. At the end of the day, the horse didn't win. But over time, he knows that that guy can win over a period. The bookmaker's now on himself by playing the smarter money. So it's very much been able to spot the client, respect the client, but also been able to handle the money, know how to do it, and have the experience and the nous of how to handle it.
And what about Betfair themselves? Do you think, obviously they've had their challenges and the authorities haven't made it particularly easy for them, but do you think there'll ever be a time when there is no Betfair operating on Australian racing?
I'd like to think not. I think it's been a great innovation to racing. I think what it's done too, it's actually helped the on-course punter. When I used to bet on tracks when there was no Betfair, you'd probably bet down to 120% markets, and when it got to 115, the fire alarm nearly went off. But now you've got, situations where your SP can be, your top flight can go under 100. Your SP is sitting up around, 104, and you're probably, well off to the bar because the bookmakers are more confident to push out a price given that they have the professional knowledge that lies in Betfair assessing those markets, that they can flick a horse out from 20s out to 50s because it's probably 80s. Whereas the old days, they wouldn't take the 20s at all. It'd probably be 17s, might have gone to 20s, but only in the last 10 minutes of betting, and that's when the market would have settled at 130. So to me, I think Betfair's actually given the punter a really good product going forward because, to me, it's actually made the market, been able to be more confident for both bookie and punter. The punter seeing the money come to something and going with it, and the bookmaker being able to see what the price is on the exchange and actually get his prices out to that as well.
And you've talked a bit about the on-course side of things because you've had a chance to go out there and experience it since you finished up with Betfair. What are the benefits as you see them for people listening to this, the keen punter still betting with an on-course bookie?
There's plenty of benefits. I think the first one that comes to mind is your ability to have a credit facility, where you sit on at the end of the week, I suppose the bookie knows you and, then you've got a private relationship. You can always, I suppose, when you've got a credit facility and you might be short 1 week, you can actually arrange to make payments or people talk to you one-on-one. You don't get transferred to a department where someone talks to you and treats you like a client number. Like I said, it's very personal. You still get to bet for cash and get paid for cash. I think people enjoy that. The whole buzz and excitement, but also too, the war of punter versus bookie. It's always been a great duel. And to me, it's just, I suppose, the colour of the actual of the action that really gets people going in there. And I've got to say, there's still people out there still betting for a bit of cash, not as good as it used to be, and that's appreciated. But at the same time, too, I think for a personal experience and a bit of fun, I think it's a lot better to probably myself. I like betting with them on course because I think that you also get the fraction, which always helps, and you've been able to have a bit of a relationship on course, which is it's always good.
And what about top flight betting? Not necessarily people you've worked with, but there's talk that if guys want to have a serious bet, that they shouldn't do too much top flight because it shows their hand. What are your thoughts on that? Because there's been talk of, you might call it price suppression or call it anything you want, but at times that's what has been accused of happening. Would you, if you're talking to a punter, would you suggest that top flight's still a reasonable alternative?
Absolutely, absolutely. Because what it was actually initially brought in for was the bookmakers to lay the horse before the betting. So therefore, instead of going up at 4s, you could probably go up at 5 to 2 because you already had it in the book and you keep it shorter. But the ability to keep a price down on course, given the competitiveness and the fact that Betfair can show the hand, for the bookmakers to spread it around and actually hold a price down would take a lot of money. So for someone to win 1,000 top luck and he probably the horse is around 7 or 8 to 1, well then I still think you can get it on course and you should be able to get around that price. I can't see why, you know, especially in today's day and age, why the price would actually smash in on you. Years ago before Betfair, you wouldn't, the smarties used to bet the top luck, and that's where the real play in the smarties worked in the bookie's favour, because not only they had the money prior to betting, but they knew which way the market would go. So, you know, for someone would ring up and back, you know, 4,000 top luck on the second favourite, which would probably go up at 4 to 1. You still didn't mind laying that, because at the same time too, you had the benefit of laying the top eight, or the favourite, sorry, that wasn't wanted by the professional money. And then you knew they'd get more as much out of that. You also had the ability to trade out the second favourite on course as well. And you could even run with it, just pop it out, do whatever you wanted by doing trading out through the betting ring. And that's why I'm saying that, you know, on the corporate level, if the bookmakers were able to trade out amongst each other, everyone could all still take that action. But I suppose with the exchange now, it's probably got a bit, you know, showing what the real price should be. But then again, too, the real price isn't really shown on Betfair until right before the jump anyway. So you still don't know where that market's going to get to. And that's where I was coming back about, you know, still why the trader is needed in today's market.
Yeah, what about the form analysis side of things? You mentioned you've been in the business for 18 years. I'm sure it's evolved in that time, but where do you see it right now and where do you see it going?
I think it's very good for the punters at the moment. I like the whole fact that a lot of these form companies now, they're coming out with their apps, people walking around race courses, they've got, you know, they've got performance ratings in their hands, they've got speed maps in their hands, things that you probably have to sit up on a Friday night and, you know, doodle away on the on pieces of paper, you know, so if you get be ready by your Saturday. The punter doesn't have to do any of that anymore. It's actually already done for you. You know, even in the Greyhound game, you've got the early speed maps, you've got early splits for dogs, and then you've got trots, speed maps now as well. So I think it's gone really well. I think what it has to keep going on is that all that stuff has to be marketed towards the punter, because the punter should be aware that that stuff happens. And the more that they're aware, the more they'll be involved. Because at the moment, I've got a real, I don't know, it's my pet hate, but I just hate thinking about the future of racing versus the other codes of betting that are out there at the moment.
You mean the challenge of sports betting?
Oh, mate, it's massive. It really is. I don't think people have understood in the top end of racing how big this actually is. And it's on a time scale of, I would say, 20 years. Now, the first one that gets me, you go in and put money in your tote account. When you walk in, and you don't see anyone watching the races on the screens except 5 18-year-old kids sitting around trackside playing computerised horses. And then the second one you've got that I've always seen in my time, especially when you got to the corporate level and you could actually see actual numbers, the demographic between 18 to 30 in sports betting versus the age group of racing, which probably the median's probably up around the mid-40s. You put that on a 20-year scale, then the graphs at the way that they're going, sports betting's really got a massive edge on racing coming up. And to me, it's the punting and the wagering of racing that keeps the sport alive. So that's my big challenge, I think, for racing coming up in the future for sure.
And you talked about things like, you know, apps and just the availability of information as one way of battling that. Is there anything else that, I know it's a big challenge, but what else do you think racing can do to either grow or maintain market share?
Yeah, I'm not too sure, Dave. You can't say that areas aren't trying. I see a lot of the things done by the Melbourne Racing Club I'm very impressed with lately. And I, you know, you see some initiatives that they're trying, and it's not an easy one. It's definitely not an easy one. And you can definitely tell in social media, if you know people, what age they are and the way they talk when they're in the punting mode. I mean, people are talking about punting 8 or 9 in the morning, whereas you probably weren't talking in the Arvo probably about 10 years ago. Now with the advent of, you've got live streaming through your computers now, you don't even just need Foxtel anymore. Sport availability is massive. And even when you go overseas, being over to Singapore, they've got the same challenges. They can't advertise their racing, you know, locally, yet the whole younger wave of punters coming through is all headed towards the Asian soccer scene, which is an absolute massive industry. So there are challenges in racing all around the world. And to keep, you know, I suppose, a steady group of youth coming through through punting. The challenges are really up against it for racing. So it's not to say, you know, nothing's been done, but at the same time, I don't know if they appreciate how big this over the next 20 years is actually going to be.
Good points. All right, we'll leave it there for today, mate. Always appreciate your time, and thanks for joining us once again.
No worries. Thanks, Dave.
Thanks for tuning in to Betting 360. Get more in-depth analysis, tips, and that betting edge by heading over to championpicks.com.au, where you'll find a full transcript of this episode. If you like the show, share us with a fellow punter or drop by iTunes to leave us your thoughts. Betting 360, punting from all angles.